Welcome to West Southwest. I'm Andy Robbins, sitting in for Gordon Evans. With me is Kalamazoo Gazette education reporter Julie Mack. Our guest today is Dr. Michael Rice, the superintendent of the Kalamazoo Public Schools.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Dr. Rice, the Speaker of the State House, Jace Bulger, has said that state funding for public education in Michigan has gone up. However, a study released last week found that it's actually below the level seen before the 2008 recession, if you adjust for inflation. Given that difference of opinion, how is KPS doing financially?
Well, I appreciate the question, and if I could step back and look at it statewide and then look at KPS for a minute. In 2005, Michigan was the 19th ranked state in per pupil expenditures at $224 above national average. 5 years later, in 2010, we were $1,124 below the national average. We were ranked 31st, and we were trending, rather than trending toward Massachusetts, we were trending toward Mississippi in the funding that the state was providing us. I mentioned that the funding that the state was providing us because post-Proposal A in the state of Michigan, it is overwhelmingly about state funding. School districts receive 80 to 90% of their funding from the state. Pre-Proposal A was roughly the opposite of that. It was overwhelmingly from the local jurisdiction. So what's happened here is the state has disinvested in public education. It's a systemic disinvestment. And you'll notice that the years I mentioned were 05 to 2010. That was before the worst year post-Proposal A in the district's and the state's history, which was 2011. When those figures come out in January of 2014, our rank nationally will have dropped even more. And again, this disinvestment is a problem. It's an enormous problem for school children who had the unhappy fortune of being born in a state at a time when that state was disinvesting in public education as opposed to investing in public education. It is true that in this last year, additional funds were allocated for public education. What is also true, however, is that all that increase, and then some, ended up paying for the MPSRS contribution rate increases, the retirement contribution rate increases that have taken place over the last few years as a function of the state legislature's action. So in fact, they've created an expenditure that's out of control, and now they're funding that out of control expenditure. Most recently, they took two actions to destabilize the pension funds. Number one, they created an early retirement incentive, which cranked up the need for additional retirement contributions. And those additional retirement contributions are over a five-year period of time. And if you speak with the head of the pension system, he will show you where that early retirement system costs and how precisely much it costs year to year to year in additional retirement contributions. That's number one. And number two, by expanding the number of charter schools in the state of Michigan, and by extension, those schools that can opt out of the pension system, you have fewer people paying into a system to support the retirees, but those retiree obligations remain fixed. Simply because you have fewer people paying into the system doesn't mean that you have fewer obligations to be paid. So the state has created a circumstance where it's really jamming not just school districts, but 1.5 million public school children in the state of Michigan. To your question more specifically about Kalamazoo Public Schools, we've had to cut $12.4 million in the last 5 years, notwithstanding the fact that in the last 7 years, we're the fastest growing district in the state with a growth of 2,450 students, a growth of 24%, a function overwhelmingly of the tremendous generosity of the Kalamazoo Promise donors, number one, and the number of reforms that we've implemented in the district, number two. So there's been a lot done in this district. We're very fortunate because of that. But even with the tremendous growth that we've had, we've still had to cut profoundly. And that growth is important in a state that funds children on a per pupil basis. If we were talking about New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, primarily property tax-based funding systems, this would be moot. But here, where property tax is just a small portion of what is largely a state-funded operation, it is a problem. And it's a profound problem that the state has cut back, and that enrollment growth, the fastest growing district in the state over a period of time, over 7 years. And again, you know, our growth is not going to continue indefinitely, but our growth over this period of time has been substantial, and that hasn't eliminated the need for us to cut. It's mitigated the need, but it hasn't eliminated the need for cut. Witness the fact that we've cut $12.4 million in those 5 years.
Specifically, what have those cuts meant for KPS?
They've been a number of things. They have meant that class sizes have increased some, not only elementary, middle, and high school, but that they've increased in terms of specials as well. They've meant that we've had to pare back some of the opportunities that we've had. If you look at our magnet themes, they're not as pronounced as they once were. The compensation has leveled off. The compensation for teachers particularly has leveled off in our district and really across the state. In fact, I remember Kalamazoo gave that article on compensation in the state of Michigan, particularly in the last decade. I think that much of what we do for young people has improved, but it's been in spite of the dollars rather than because of the dollars. But if you look at class sizes particularly, they have increased on the margins. If you look at, for example, our assistant principals at the elementary school level, they're gone. We used to have assistant principals at the elementary school level. We got rid of them in that wave of $6 million worth of cuts a couple of years ago. So we have a principal who's in charge of a building, 520, 530 kids, no assistant principal. If you look at our upper elementary class sizes, they're 29 to 1. They're sitting right up against contractual maximums. If you look at middle school and high school class sizes, they're significant as well. Now, other districts, I'm not suggesting that we are more adversely affected than other districts. I'm simply suggesting that districts across the state of Michigan are operating under less than ideal circumstances. And if you were to look at the circumstances under which districts and schools are operating in higher achieving states, in states like, for example, New Jersey or Massachusetts or New York, you're going to find different ratios. You're going to find different staffing support. You and I have had this conversation before, that in my old district, we had a nurse per school. And in our current district, we have two nurses for 13,000 kids. We had at least a half-time media specialist in every elementary school. We have two full-time librarians in our current district. The rest are made up of library aides or volunteers. Those sorts of service diminutions or service reductions adversely affect children in the classroom. We're trying to create a literacy community, as you know, the first urban literacy community in the country where everyone is fully literate. And yet we have libraries that aren't fully staffed with librarians. I might add, you can go to school districts across the state and see that. We have a neighboring school district that doesn't have a counselor at a high school. So, I mean, you're beginning to see gaps in service provision across the state as a function of the cuts.
You're listening to West Southwest on WMUK. I'm Andy Robbins. With me is Julie Mack from MLive, and our guest is Dr. Michael Rice, the superintendent of the Kalamazoo Public Schools.
Dr. Rice, maybe you can talk to us about how you see technology being used in KPS right now and how you see it being used in the future, both perhaps in online classes. Lots of schools now are going to use iPads, that sort of thing. I know, actually, I think you just signed off on a bunch of technology purchases.
We did, and I think the future for this is quite interesting for us. A year ago, we had, you're familiar, Julie, that we've got a teaching and learning council, and we had a number of people come forward, mostly teachers, and ask for mini grants at the teaching and learning council. And we have a small amount of money each year that we provide for mini grant proposals for our teachers. And they come forward, they ask for $500 or $750, $1,000 to do a specific project with very specific deliverables and the like. And what we found was that a good half of these were about technology and about the need for, or the desire for, some discrete form of technology to embellish what they were doing in their classrooms. They weren't frivolous. They were absolutely a part of the grade level content expectations or the high school content expectations. But they could be better achieved, these expectations, with the technology. And we ended up not only funding all of these small mini grant proposals, but used these as somewhat of a foundation for our bond work, which we did subsequently. And you know that when we went out for the May 2013 bond, it wasn't simply for the replacement of what we currently have, but it was envisioning a world where we were going to have to do more one-on-one computing. I envision in the next half decade that this district will be into one-on-one or one-to-one computing or one-to-one computer use at the 10th, 11th, and 12th grade levels. That's my expectation.
Just to clarify for the audience, what that means is that you would be supplying some kind of personal device for each student.
That's right. Yeah. Yes, that's right. You know, would it necessarily be an iPad? It's not clear. I mean, you tell me what it's going to be in 5 years. If people had said to us, this would be the state of technology 5 years ago, I don't think people would necessarily have bought it, or 10 years ago or 15 years ago. I mean, the generations turn so very, very quickly. Smart boards, which used to be considered smart, have now become considered somewhat less smart as we move to projectors that are able to work on all sorts of different walls, minus the so-called smart technology. By the way, the smart technology isn't overly smart, because if you pick up both a pen and the eraser at the same time, you can't operate the smart board. The smart board is somewhat flummoxed as to what you exactly want it to do. The somewhat less smart board, the whiteboard, or what I grew up with, the blackboard, you can pick up the chalk or the dry erase marker. You can pick up the eraser, and the board, being not so smart, doesn't react so substantially. So what I anticipate is over the next year or so, that whereas we've got a number of, you know, the one wave of technology with smart boards in classrooms to provide teachers with that technology, I anticipate that those overhead devices are going to be in the absence of smart boards, that's going to be the smarter technology to which we move. I anticipate the one-on-one devices over the next 5 years. I believe that that's what we're going to be preparing our children for as they move into college. I mean, this is what your children have in college and graduate school. And if we're preparing our children for a world beyond KPS, which we are in our aspiration to be a fully college-going culture, we're going to have to prepare them for those worlds. Moreover, we're going to have to prepare them in a community, Kalamazoo community, where everyone isn't a middle-class youngster, and where everyone isn't necessarily going to have their own device. You know, in some middle-class communities, they talk about BYOD, bring your own device to school. And I think that's fine. There are districts that are trying to accommodate all devices. But how do you accommodate the absence of a device? You know, it's somewhat simpler to accommodate the myriad of devices, not simple, but somewhat simpler than it is to accommodate the absolute inability to provide anything technologically for my son or my daughter. And so those are some disparate thoughts on technology.
Regardless of what technology a student is using, they have to be evaluated at the end of the day and how well they're doing in class. Recently, KPS has undertaken a major shift in evaluating how its students are doing. What's driving that change? Is it on the local level, the state, federal level, or a combination?
It's really a combination. And there are actually two things that we did on August 22nd related to what you're saying, Andy. The first is our board passed new long-term goals, sub-goals, and targets. We had six-year goals that the board approved January of 2009. We kept those goals for 4 years. 12 of those goals had targets. We made progress on all 12. We actually accomplished 6 of the 12 goals, 6-year sub-goals, in the 4-year period of time. The other 6 we made progress on, again, in the 4-year period of time, and their 6-year sub-goals. But over a period of time, those sub-goals became less relevant. They became less relevant for a few reasons. One, the state stopped giving tests in particular grades. So when the state stopped giving a middle school test in writing at a particular grade, we had to make our writing sub-goal the new grade that writing was, that writing exam was given. That's one. Two, our cut scores rose. And those are the scores above which you're considered to be proficient, below which you're considered to be partially proficient or non-proficient. When the cut scores rose across the state, proficiency dropped across the state. And as a result, we had to alter our targets, given the fact that the targets were originally crafted with particular cut scores or bars in mind. The other thing that we changed was our thinking about the world. The board said, look, we have a four-year graduation rate. That's beautiful. But we also need a target associated with five-year graduation rate as well, because everybody doesn't graduate on the same time frame. Everybody doesn't bloom in the same time frame. And so we want not only a four-year target, but also a five-year target. So board created new goals, sub-goals, and targets on August 22nd. But at the same time, we implemented a new assessment calendar, in some cases with new assessments. And we did that because the board wanted to provide our teachers with the very, very best tools that they can to discern what challenges kids have, where children are in their instruction, and by extension, what resources are available to help them. We have a new K-5 English Language Arts series. It's the first new English Language Arts series in a generation at the elementary level in the district's history. We're extremely excited about this. Not only is this new series very, very well thought of, but in addition to this, it's rich with not only fiction, but nonfiction. It has assessments to determine where kids are, but more importantly, not only do we know where kids are from these periodic assessments, but we're also able to provide enormous numbers of leveled readers once we know where a child is. So if we determine that a child is at the second grade, fifth month level, we have a tremendous amount of resources at this point that we can pump into that kid at his level, not a grade above, not a grade below, and not in a narrow series of subjects, but rather a broad range of subjects where the kids really have a lot from which to choose, a lot to interest them, a lot to engage them. So it's the combination of a new K-5 English Language Arts series, new assessments, new goals, sub-goals, and targets as well.
Some of these new tests, though, are tied with the somewhat controversial national core curriculum. I say controversial because it's run into some headwinds in Lansing, and the state has not even formally decided whether it's going to adopt it yet, although the state superintendent of instruction wants to. Is it a good idea to tie your assessments closely to something that the state may not adopt?
The state is moving everything toward Common Core. If you look at the grade level content expectations, K-8, if you look at the high school content expectations, the Huskies, 9-12, you'll see the Common Core woven into what's being done in English language arts and mathematics. That's important. We need higher standards, not only in the state, but nationally. We can argue about what those standards ought to be. I think those are important arguments. I think there ought to be discussions about what we have as standards for our young people. But whether we should have standards and whether we should have higher standards, I think should largely be unarguable from my vantage point. With respect to the tests, there's always going to be some debate about assessments. I do think we ought to assess based on Common Core. The debate now in the state legislature is whether they're going to provide any money to implement Common Core, not whether there's an approval of Common Core, although that's at the core, if you will, of the debate, but rather are they going to pump any money into it? And you could argue, you know, what does it mean to implement what you can't fund? You're right. It's somewhat empty. The Smarter Balance assessment is necessary. Again, you can quibble about the components thereof. I think those are rich conversations that need to take place. We may not all agree about what should be on those tests, but the idea that 90% of the kids in the state of Texas are at or above proficiency And yet, if you look at their NAEP scores, they are very, very, very low. And yet, who understands NAEP? It's a test that only certain schools and certain grades with certain kids have to take. It's supposed to be a representative sample of a state's children, which roll up into the presumed proficiency for the population in a given state. What we need is to understand clearly what's going on in the state of Michigan relative to other states, to see how we're doing, to see how we're not doing, to see what we need to do to improve education for children in the state of Michigan. Because ultimately, our job is not to prepare kids to succeed in the state of Michigan, although that is part of the goal. It's to prepare children to succeed in the country and in the world, because the reality is the world is shrinking very, very quickly. And so we have a responsibility to prepare children for more than simply success in our local community or in our state, but more broadly. And the way we do that is with higher standards. So I agree with the state superintendent in that regard.
One of your big mantras over the past few years has been making children college ready, mm-hmm. making sure every child is college ready. What do you feel has been, how do you feel you're doing on that goal so far? And what's your biggest challenge in regards to the creating a college-ready culture?
I mentioned the progress toward district sub-goals, and clearly we've made progress. You've written about that progress in reading, writing, mathematics, and the like. There's been an increase in graduation rate. There's been an increase in advanced placement participation. More than 200 AP tests get college credit that didn't get college credit just a few years ago. So we're making progress on our way toward a college-going culture and toward a literacy community, which serves as the foundation of a college-going culture. That said, are we there yet? No, we're not there yet. We have a ways to go. Our challenge is that we educate all children. We're the Emma Lazarus of schools. You know, we're the give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. We're everyone. You know, it was striking. One of my senior staff came to me last year and said, we've been asked to accept some expelled children. And I said, expelled children? We don't usually accept expelled children. Why would we accept expelled children? Well, these were expelled by a charter school. They were expelled by a charter school. So why are we having this conversation? If they were expelled, they were expelled. So they're out of school. Well, they were expelled for something that we probably wouldn't expel for. Okay, well, what were they expelled for? They were expelled for leaving school early and going out and kissing. Oh, yeah, that's true. It's not an expellable offense in the district to leave school a few minutes early and to kiss. Now, you know, might there be some consequence associated with leaving school early? You bet. Expulsion, not so much. We educate everyone. We educate all the children. We don't choose to say, you know what, if you're poor, we don't educate you. If you're working class, we don't educate you. If you have special needs, we don't educate you. English language learner, we don't educate you. From another country, we don't educate you. Challenging character in one sort of another, we don't educate you. There are other districts and other schools that are more discriminating in that regard than we. And our biggest challenge is our greatest strength, which is our diversity. We have tremendous diversity, which I think is a great benefit of ours. But it's also a tremendous challenge, particularly with the very substantial percentages of children who have very little exposure in their home lives and in their neighborhoods to libraries, to museums, to concerts, to a whole host of other things that enrich their lives and show them the value of an education as a means of moving up toward their dreams and toward what they want to do in their futures.
Dr. Rice, wanted to give you an opportunity to perhaps talk about reviewing the district's student safety policy in light of a couple of unfortunate incidents that have happened in the district recently. One had to do with a student who was left on a bus, and another had to do with a young lady in one of the high schools who became pregnant after an inappropriate encounter with a former district employee. Does the district have a student safety problem, or is this something you think is under control?
Well, we've got 13,000 kids. We've got a couple thousand people that work for us full-time or part-time throughout the year. And certainly we look to hire the very best people in all jobs in the district. There are times when people transgress. When they do, we take the requisite action. In the case of the security officer, he was a person who worked for us for several weeks over a three-month period of time. He was a sporadic employee. He had challenges at home. And ultimately, he left district service in April. We had received concern about one incident. The incident to which you refer is a separate incident, and his employment with the district was discontinued in April once there was conversation about the first incident. With respect to the bus driver made a mistake, and given the nature of the mistake, bus driver is no longer working with us.
But you feel the district as a whole has a good safety?
I do, yeah, I do. I think, look, it's like anything else. The reality is that you can pick incidents out across the country, and KPS is no exception to that. There's no doubt in my mind KPS is not an exception to that. But if you look at the climate at Alloy Norix, I recently glanced at an article by a noted reporter in the community about the climate at one of our high schools, at Alloy Norix, as a matter of fact. And one of the students mentioned the reputation relative to the reality. If you'd like to see what the reality is, we invite you to Alloy Norix. We invite you to Kalamazoo Central as well. Or for that matter, Phoenix High School, or our four middle schools, or our middle school alternative learning program, or 17 elementary schools. They are not perfect environments, but they are markedly stronger environments and markedly more focused on the education of our young people than some who are disconnected from our schools give them credit for being. And they are absolutely improving what they do for children on a regular basis.
And to wrap up, I would like to ask you just to respond very briefly, just in a minute or two, a subject I know that you're very interested in. What role do you believe that KPS should have in promoting better preschool education in the greater Kalamazoo area?
Well, I believe in universal preschool and universal high-quality preschool, not something that resembles what we used to have in terms of preschool, which was more akin to, you know, a child care situation or a babysitting situation, but actually a preschool where children come out learning their numbers to 10, their letters, their colors, their shapes, learning some measure of how to work with one another. I think all of those are legitimate goals for preschool. So I believe in universal high-quality preschool. I was supportive of Isaac when it made it a push in 2007-2008 at the urging of Dr. Tim Bardick of the Upjohn Institute. I was supportive of the pledge that they had a number of elected and appointed officials take at Galilee Baptist Church, October of 2008, when they asked, are you supportive of? And I said, yes. With support of the work of Kalamazoo County Committee on Early Childhood Education, which worked for 2 years, the forerunner of Casey Ready Fours. So I believe in this. The question becomes for us, how do we end up affording it in the context of the other needs in the community, both needs associated with children and needs associated with adults as well. But I do think it's important. I do think we need to figure it out.
The cost issue is unfortunately a discussion we'll have to leave for another time. We've been speaking with Dr. Michael Rice, the superintendent of the Kalamazoo Public Schools. With me has been Julie Mack, the education reporter at MLive Kalamazoo. And you've been listening to West Southwest on WMUK. Thanks for joining us.